So we have a few. We have 1 minute. So I'll just briefly say about myself. My name is Tal. I'm in my last year of PhD in statistics at Tel Aviv University. And this work is, so this doesn't count for my 15 minutes. So I'll just say that this work, like many other things I do, is a hobby that kind of got out of control. And I hope you'll find that interesting. However, when I first committed myself to give this talk, I thought that I may not probably have much to do and much to say. And then after I did all the slides and ran through them, it took me half an hour to do it. And since I have 15 minutes, I'm gonna really emphasize the overview part, in the sense that I'm not pretending to teach you what I'm talking about. I'm pretending to tell you what are good, important aspects to think about in your work. And the slides contain the extra detail that you'll need to implement them, but you'll need your time at home to really see how to do it properly. Also, I'll say that I'm not exactly sure in this conference where to put up the slides for you, but this is my email, so you're welcome to come and ask me for the slides after the talk, to ask me questions after the talk, and to email me with whatever question and/or with asking for the slides. Okay, so with that said, let's start with a data set for motivation. So this is a data set on the measles incidence rate per 100,000 people in the 50 states of the US plus the District of Columbia over 76 years. And as you can see, this is just a table with a lot of numbers where you have a row for each state across the years. And the table itself is not very informative. When you look at it, you don't see much. So you want to visualize it somehow. Important to note is that in 1963, they introduced vaccines for the measles, and then in 1968, they introduced an improved version of vaccine for the measles. And we would want to plot it, so we could do it with something like this. We could do this line chart where you can see across time the number of incidents per state, and I think the effect is very apparent. Vaccines work. talk over. But we want to be critical with our work as data analysts, and when we look at this plot, it drives the point home, but that's where it stops. So we don't get any nuanced view of the actual states per state. If I were to ask you, how is Alabama doing? I have no idea. So that's where you want to go with something like a heat map visualization, which is a great way of showing you a high-dimensional, complex something data. And this particular visualization was done by some project called TEHO, which was an attempt to visualize data about vaccines to bring it to the public, the importance of vaccines. So this was a very lovely visualization, interactive. It was tweeted by Bill Gates. It was featured in the Wall Street Journal. Great thing, about a year ago. So without showing of hands, just imagine to yourself, who here thinks that this is a good visualization? Just imagine it. Ignore the puzzle. So, I thought it is, right? So the remaining of the talk, if someone can get a technical person to think about this, but in the remaining of the talk, I'm trying to say that, yeah, it's a great visualization. It's very colorful. You still see the pattern of the measles getting much diminished after you get introduced vaccines. But I want to say that maybe we can do it in a better way that takes into account the fact that for the last 140 years, heat maps have been around and more thought have been put into how can you do a better job with creating them. Okay, so this is going to be a quick run-through of what I'm going to try to talk about, and then I'm going to take each element and take it and talk about it in detail. So first, I want to talk a bit about the defaults of how you would want to do it with R. Then I would like to talk about how do you choose color schemes. After that, I would like to talk about data transformation and their importance. Then I'd like to speak more about clustering, hierarchical clustering, and maybe how you want to think about that. A bit more about ordering of rows and columns. And lastly, a bit more about interactive heat maps, which has just been introduced in the last year, thanks to amazing work from people bringing JavaScript into R and back. Okay, so let's start. Oh, and if we have extra time, I'll talk about some bonus things, and I think there is no chance of that. Let's start with the default. So in R, you have, I don't know if you know, a lot of packages. You have Last time I checked, it was over 8,600 CRAN packages just on CRAN. So for heatmap, you also have a lot of options. So you have the default heatmap function in base R, then you have heatmap 2 in gplots, then you have, which tried to improve on that, then there was heatmap 3 by someone else again trying to improve, then you have a bunch of people trying to do it with ggplot 2 and with grid graphics, and then the newer stuff with Heatmaply and D3 Heatmap, which I'll talk at the end of the talk. And I'm going to focus on Heatmap 2 because my talk is, in a sense, very agnostic to the specific implementation. It's about more about the ideas that you want to take into account. So each one of these methods would take the data and you run it inside a function called Heatmap and something, and you would get something like this. So already the defaults of Heatmap 2, I would say, are not serving our purpose in this particular data for several reasons. So the first one is because the margins is not so well, it doesn't fit the labels so well. So okay, we can fix that quite easily. But then we see all these traces on top. So this is a nice feature maybe. I never used it ever. I always remove it. So I would remove it this way. I don't know why it's the default. And then you get this thing where you say to yourself, okay, this is better, but I suddenly don't see the pattern I saw before. And the reason for that is because it also uses the hierarchical clustering ordering and constraints on the columns, which are the years, which totally messes up the point we were trying to bring here. So we need to remove the columns, the ordering of the columns. Okay, now we're better, right? You see that from years from left to right, we have a lot of outbreaks, and then you have little outbreaks, and then suddenly you see nothing. And that's the point where I want to say now things are getting interesting. So I would like to say that this is a much better color scheme that you want to use as opposed to this default color scheme. And just give me a quick show of hands. Who here has heard or used the Viridis package? Very good. Almost no one. So I'll say that looking at the R community and the R ecosystem, every now and then there is something that comes up which is really tiny. But it's transformative, you know, like RStudio, or pipes, which I found to be really transformative. One of these things has come up in the last year or so, which is Viridis. So what is Viridis? Viridis is a long project that took something like 7 years of someone's PhD to create, where he said, I want to create a default color palette for using in data visualization. And when he wanted to do that, he didn't think it would take him 7 years. And also he's from the Python community, so boo. But people of course ported it to R, yay. So now we have access to this also in a package called Viridis. And the criterions he wanted to preserve when doing this package was he wanted the color palette to be colorful, meaning to go through as many different types of colors as you can. He also wanted to be perceptually uniform, which means that when you have a difference in values, the difference you would sense in the colors would be similar. You wouldn't have crude jumps between the colors. He also wanted to be friendly to people who are colorblind. And lastly, he wanted it to be pretty, so that people would want to look at the color palette. So in a talk he gave in SciPy, he actually compared these different color palettes that preserved the three qualities. But the fourth one, he wanted to choose one to be default, right? So he wanted something that would be the prettiest. And he asked people, and that was before he did Viridis. He had this Magma Plasma Inferno. And people were pretty much agnostic. And then he added Viridis to the mix of saying, what do you prefer? And it was a huge difference. And his conclusion was, you want it to be pretty, have it with green. Okay, so it has green. So just a quick show of a very common color palette. So you have the rainbow, which never use. Although I attended yesterday's talk about the choosing of colors, and apparently there is early empirical evidence for the sometimes maybe there is reason to use rainbow, but unfortunately it didn't compare it to Viridis, which would probably come up first, yeah? You also have the heap, which we've seen. There is the ggplot default. And here you have Viridis and Magma, which are smarter, well thought out color palettes. So if you take these and transform them into something that a green blind person would see, you see that, okay, heat and ggplot default. Ooh, maybe. You think it's this?
Yeah.
Oh, try. So you'd see that the default of ggplot and heatmap are not showing you as much difference as you would like. And if you're using Rainbow, the guy doesn't know what the hell you're showing him. But Viridis is doing quite amazing, and so is Magma. The same is true for different other types of color blindness. And also just grayscale if you want to print it for paper. Okay, so this is before and after. And I feel that this is better. So it must be better. So let's talk a bit about transformation. So you have this effect that you've seen, right, in all the lines. But when you look at it in the heat map, you don't sense it as much with many of the states. I mean, you kind of get it, but you don't really get it. And the reason you don't really get it is because you have very small number of years for which there was a huge outbreak of the measles that really masks all of the effect that you care to see here. So because of that, we want to somehow transform the data to highlight that effect. And in the heat map functions, and in almost every one that I've seen, you have always the scale parameter that allows you to normalize things, meaning to get it to mean of zero and variance of one, either by the columns or by the rows. Doing it by the columns makes no sense. Doing it by the rows also makes no sense. I mean, I have no idea why we would want to normalize this compared to that own state. We are talking about dead people, which is something that's supposed to be interesting in all states, in all times. It's not something that you're scaling per state. But if you're looking at the histogram of the distribution of the general incidence, and when you're actually starting to think about it, you're saying, wait, that's count data, right? That's probably semi-Poisson, so probably something like a square root transformation would do a good job. Indeed it does, as you can see. So, thank you. Let's hope. We're hopeful. We're taking a deep breath. Okay. Does it work now? I'll try. Let's see. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. So when you take this data and you square root it, you get something like this, which is already quite, it preserves this effect that you want, but you also start to see this nuance of what happened between the two types of vaccines. And when you do it with the heat map before and after, it looks quite much better. I mean, you can really see the effect. The consequence of that also is that the dendrogram that you're gonna get on the side is not gonna be the same, because the values it's gonna use for that is gonna be different. Okay, there are many ways of doing transformations. I'm not gonna talk about them, I don't have time. So I want to talk a bit about how do you do clustering. And again, without going into much detail, the way heatmap does it in the background is that it creates distance for the data and then run hierarchical clustering on it, which is something you can then take and do on its own and plot it and get this. By the way, who here knows about the Dendix10 package? Please raise your hand. Okay. I feel useful. Okay, so this is done with defaults behind the scenes. So you're choosing it really with the default of Euclidean and complete. And when you open up the functions and check, you have like six options of distances and eight for types of linkage methods. If you don't know what that means, read about it. But that gives you 48 combinations of how you can choose your hierarchical clustering. That's a lot. So here comes a shameless self-promotion. So I wrote a package, Dendix10, which I started working on for the last 3 years and still in development and in work. It's been published in Bioinformatics about almost a year ago. And since I've worked on it more, it's open access, BBCC, so CCBY, sorry. So without going into how I'm doing it, Dendix10 allows you to create, instead of a list, a dend list, which is basically a list that chains dendrogram objects. So I can create all the 48 variations, put them inside the dend list, and then ask to do a correlation, a pairwise correlation between the dendrograms, which I'm not going to explain what that is, but you can do it. And then you can plot it with this nice core plot. And you can see that you have types of combinations that give you similar dendrograms and types that give you different dendrograms. And then you could use something like this tanglegram function from Dendix10 that would allow you to compare these dendrograms and say to yourself, do some sensitivity analysis. Is it giving me similar results, different results? And think what you want to do with it, which I'm not going to talk about now because I have a few minutes left. Okay, so another thing that you may want to do is, okay, so you're choosing something, the default, And now you want to choose, the reason you want clustering is because you want to have an observe the different types of data you have, to see the patterns you have on top of it. So I'm not going to go into how you want to do that because I don't have much time, but the intuition about it is very similar to the within and between variants you have. So you want the clusters to be such that you're choosing a number of clusters, that each cluster, the objects inside it has low variance and higher variance to all the objects outside of it. So a way of measuring it, there are many ways. So one that I've implemented for dendrograms to easily use is the average silhouette width. And all it takes from you is to just have this plot that says for different number of clusters, meaning the way you cut the dendrogram and see the different clusters, for a different number, what silhouette, average silhouette width are you getting? And all you need to do that is to run find k, and you would get that plot, and you say, oh, it must be 4. So I can then use pipes, which everyone now knows because of Hadley in the morning, and just pipe your data and then run color branches k equal 4, put that dendrogram inside, and you would get this nice color on the side of the heat map. Okay, another thing that I want to say is about ordering. So again, without going into the computational combinatorial nuances of this, we basically want the things that are high values at the top and low value at the bottom. This is what I'm showing you now, which was different than before. And an easy way of doing that is by combining the seriation package with the dendextend package. So you have this in dendextend, a function that wraps it called seriadendrogram. You run it with dend and with the distance matrix. You put it back, plug it back into the heat map, and you get this nice comparison, this nice reordering, which is more nice to notice something like, for example, why are we having so many low values in these states? So when you actually go back to the data, you realize there are missing values. So you don't have any values for these states in those years, which we didn't see at all before, I think. Did we? Maybe. Okay. And lastly, I would say with the minus 1 minute that I have left, that there is now an option to do interactive heat maps with R. And I will just, do we have it open? Did we open up the thing? Okay, no. So I'm gonna just quickly open it. And while opening it, I'll say that there are two options. So I was approached by, Joe Chang from our studio. You might have heard of some of his project, Shiny. So he approached me and he said, I want to do this D3 heat map package, but I want someone who knows a tiny bit about heat maps. And since you did this dendextend, you must know something about heat maps. So can you show us how to, can you maybe work with me on it? So I said, of course, which was both a blessing and a curse, because every time I wrote something, I was very humbled to see the code goes from this to this when he edited it. So I was deeply reminded that I'm more a statistician than a programmer. But it was very enlightening. So we worked on that, and there is now the D3 heat map, which basically allows you to have this effect of hover. So when you have the mouse over some cell, you see what happens, and you can then also zoom in like this and see those specific states. So this is D3 heat map. It was awesome and great, and I really wanted to keep seeing it develop. But unfortunately, Joe Chang has one limitation, which is he's a one-person operation. So he only has 10 things he can work on at the same time, not 11. And D3 heatmap is one of those that he's mostly dropped the ball on, which is great. I mean, he's doing amazing work, and he's an amazing programmer, but he's limited in time. So a few months ago, I started working on Heatmaply, which if you can open it because it's on the desktop, and then I'm done. I discovered Plotly. Who here knows Plotly? Give me a show of hands. Very good, very good, because I don't have time to talk about it. But Plotly worked on this JavaScript library a long time ago, which was closed source. They open sourced it, I think, half a year ago. It means basically you can create your ggplot object, then run just the function ggplotly, and that's it. You have now an interactive version of your heat map or your whatever ggplot object. So I wrapped that with some nuances that you need to do to get the cluster heat maps with dendextend. And now you have this thing, which is heatmaply, which you just do heatmaply data, and you get it. Also has the zoom in, but with some nice features. So for example, I'm done here. You can zoom it here and so on. Thank you.
Thank you.